This is The Takeaway. I'm Matt Katz. So you definitely do not know this about me, but before I became a reporter for WNYC, I spent some time as a dating columnist. At the beginning of my journalism career, long before I joined New York Public Radio, I wrote a dating column for the Courier-Post in New Jersey that was syndicated to a few dozen small papers around the country. The column was called The Bachelor Pad, and I was sometimes called South Jersey's very own Carrie Bradshaw. So in the years since I stopped writing self-deprecating stories about my dating experiences, single life has changed a lot, and so has my life. I traded in my bachelor pad for a wife and two kids. Now, the pandemic and the resulting isolation is changing how people date on an even deeper level. We're hearing from many of you about what dating has been like during COVID-19.
Hi, this is Barbara Novak from Little River, South Carolina. I am dating right now, meeting the dates in the park initially. And then once we get to where we're okay, we have dinners in or takeout, watch movies, listen to music, and just talk. It's been a challenge, but not too bad. Thanks so much.
This is Joanne from Denver. Yes, I am seeing someone, but haven't seen them since this all started. And we FaceTime every day and talk about when this will be okay and when we'll be able to see each other, and we still haven't come up with a date.
Hey, this is Caroline calling from South Carolina. So as far as the pandemic is going and dating, everything's been going good. I met a guy on Facebook dating right before everything was self-quarantined. We've been dating pretty normally, except for we can't go into places like restaurants.
This is Julie Motz, and I'm calling from Fairfax, California. I'm doing a lot of socially distant hiking dates. The only problem is that it makes for a longer time commitment to a first date than I normally like. And it's amazing how beautiful scenery can be spoiled by a boring conversation.
My name is Susie, and I'm calling from Manhattan. The pandemic has been a real challenge on my dating life. After not seeing each other for over a month, we decided that it would be okay for me to take Metro North up to see him. I leave my home with a mask, with hand sanitizer. So we're in a polyamorous relationship. An other man that I'm dating lives in Brooklyn with his wife and his kid. We will not meet. There are too many people involved. I have so many friends in the polyamorous community, and it's been a real challenge.
Some of you told us you're feeling pretty pessimistic about dating in this moment.
This is Barbara from Brownsville, Oregon. Yeah, I've been in the process of, like, you know, looking for my soulmate, and this pandemic has pretty much eliminated any chance of finding one. My search for my soulmate has pretty much hit the skids for now.
And for others, it sounds like your relationships are moving a lot faster than they would have before the pandemic.
Hi, this is Craig from Pittsburgh. It's been really difficult trying to determine expectations and set boundaries when our budding relationship went from 0 to 60 in a few months. And we began spending most of our time together with few other places where we could hang out either together or separately.
This is Em calling from Nashville, Tennessee. I started reconnecting with a disjointed love right before the pandemic. We got accidentally pregnant, and he ended up moving in with me to help me navigate an abortion during the initial shutdown. Although we both considered keeping it, it was not the right time in my life for motherhood. Now we're living together 24/7 in a serious new relationship, getting to know each other and love each other. Being only with each other 90% of the time has been really intense and difficult, but also constructive. I feel like we've learned deep things about each other that would have stayed hidden much longer in normal life.
And this is something I've been thinking a lot about. When I wrote a dating column in the early 2000s, I was documenting how the internet and the brand new world of Match.com had revolutionized dating. Now, with the coronavirus, it seems like we're experiencing another major shift in how we date and fall in love. So I thought I'd bring in some experts to talk about what things are like today and what dating might look like in the future as a result of this pandemic. Jessica Goldstein is with us. She's a freelance writer who writes for Datelab at the Washington Post. And Marianne Fisher is a psychology professor at St. Mary's University. Thank you both for joining us.
Hi,
thanks
happy to be here.
Matt.
So, Marianne, what are the major ways that this pandemic is changing how people date?
Everyone has to make a choice. And the very first choice they have to make is whether or not they're going to abide by whatever rules are in place and governing meeting up. So, that's the very first thing to take into consideration. So if you're someone who's rule abiding and you're looking for somebody, if they say to you very early on in your online matchmaking, oh, let's meet, then that pretty much rules that person out. Or on the other hand, if you're someone that is going to be rule abiding, you're talking to other people who are rule abiding, that relationship is going to look very different during the pandemic than what we would normally see. So you're going to have a lot more discussion online, a lot more potentially meaningful conversations happening. And the data from different dating apps are supporting that.
Jessica, it seems like if people are getting to, are forced to start talking to each other online before they meet in person, that it kind of slows down the getting to know you process. Is that right?
I think in some ways it speeds it up because there's no distraction. There's no like banter about the bar that you're at. There's no skipping getting to know someone and just making out with them. All you have is text, phone, or video chat, and you really have to just engage with the person to whom you're speaking. And I think in some ways it will expedite the process of people not necessarily getting to know each other the way that they want to, but getting more vulnerable with the way that they speak to each other.
Wow, interesting. And what's happening, Jessica, with dating apps? Are people using the apps and then just communicating over them and therefore not meeting? Do we have any information from OkCupid and Tinder about what sort of numbers they're seeing in terms of people using the sites?
That is a great question. I don't have data on that. All I have are anecdotes from friends and other dating app users. I think people are feeling the effects of social isolation and really do want to connect with other people. And one of the really good things about connecting with a brand new person is you have things to talk about beyond the immediate. So what did you do today? Did you change out of your nighttime pajamas into daytime pajamas? You know, there's this whole wealth of stuff to talk about with a stranger who's interested in you.
So it's actually easier and less awkward to communicate with strangers on these apps than maybe it was before?
I think it's awkward in a different way, but you do have the shared experience of the pandemic and how surreal that has made everyday life. And so you automatically have something really significant to bond with this brand new person over.
Marianne, companionship feels so precious right now. Are we seeing any change in what people are looking for from dating? I can't figure out whether people might be more eager for hookups just for like that carnal contact, or maybe they're looking for a longer term love because the future seems so bleak and too bleak to face alone. Is it shifting what people want?
I think it is. We're actually trying to get that data now. I know that a lot of the different online dating apps are reporting an increase in membership and also an increase in the number of messages people are sending. I'm more interested in the messaging because if you're trying to seek someone out to establish a relationship, you talk to them, right? And Jessica was mentioning that, like you have to engage in a different kind of conversation. And I think what might be ultimately happening, and this is speculation, but there are people that just want to hook up. You know, that hasn't changed. But I think there's a lot more people who are reflecting on the situation they're in. And some of the interview data I'm seeing really does show that. So, you know, they're going, hey, I'm taking stock for the first time, either in a long time or ever. And I'm realizing that if this sort of situation arises again, it would be really cool to have somebody here with me, right? And I think that's really impactful. And I think that's what's going to have a lasting effect for a lot of individuals, right? Like that need for companionship, to not be alone, to have someone to touch, you know, the most fundamental thing. Touch. So I'm really curious. So we're scrambling a little bit right now to try to collect some data before all the lockdowns ease up. And then we want to do a follow-up study a couple months from now, because we have data from before, right? So we can do a beautiful timeline to see how people's attitudes and expectations and behaviors have changed over time.
Jessica, I want to talk about the calculations that people are making in this moment. As states start to reopen, are people practicing safe dating right now? And in what ways are they doing that?
I think in some ways what we'll end up seeing is just an amplification of what was going on before, which is different individuals have a different threshold for risk and will be making their choices accordingly. So in the before, there were people who, depending on the circumstances, felt comfortable and safe going home with somebody that they just met at a bar. And then there are people who would not at all tolerate that level of risk, but would wait several dates, wait till they met someone's friends, wait till they could Google search somebody. So I think you'll see kind of a similar pattern where there will be people who are hungry enough for human contact and have done the calculus and decided it's worth it, it's worth that risk. And then there will be people who are much more cautious because the stakes feel pretty high.
Marianne, do you think those who are choosing to go out right now to date in this moment might feel a sense of shame that they're doing something wrong or dangerous? And should they?
Yeah, that's an interesting question. I definitely think it adds a layer of like the shame and the guilt and the naughtiness and all those sorts of things. And in a way, that actually might be a binder, right? Like it might be a way of a couple coming together because they're engaging in this illicit behavior as a bond. One thing I think is really important to keep in mind is that people's ability to date right now is also going to be influenced by factors like, do they have a lot of pressures on their time? Like, are they taking care of their kids full time now? And are they engaged in a lot of meal prep? And what sort of activities are they doing? And that, I think, might also lead to feelings of shame and guilt, because if you're putting at risk other people in your household that are vulnerable, then that of course, adds an extra factor to consider.
But Jessica, people are dating without seeing each other, and they're considering a dating right now, right? I mean, they're having like Zoom dates, FaceTime dates.
Yeah, it's very strange. It's like, what if Black Mirror were a rom-com? There's a lot of like, finding a workaround. In some ways, it's very inspiring because there's this sense that that desire to flirt, to fall in love, to have adventures, to feel connected to other people, it is that feeling is not a casualty of COVID. People still crave it and it needs an outlet, and we'll find one with whatever technology is available to us.
Do you think, Jessica, that some of the rituals of the dating world might change permanently, like moving in for the first kiss and other things that might seem right now like you can't possibly do that, and maybe things like alter forever because of the way that we're experiencing this whole pandemic?
It's so strange to even imagine permanently from here. But I do think that in the short term permanent, like from now until there's a vaccine, any kind of physical contact will feel potentially more fraught, more dangerous, but also maybe then more exciting, more romantic, more meaningful. And I do think this has been like the factor that has normalized video chat for people for whom that was like an option that they were never really utilizing before.
Jessica, what about physical intimacy right now? The New York City Board of Health actually issued guidelines on how to protect yourself as best as possible from catching the coronavirus during sex. How are conversations around sex changing right now?
I wonder if in some ways, again, it's not like having sex with a new partner was some risk-free proposition before, right? You were always calculating how much you could trust this other person, how honest were they being with you, what disclosures did you need to make, what disclosures did they need to make. So if anything, it's like we're all undergoing this massive public health awareness program where we'll just have to be communicating more, and the stakes again feel a bit higher about if you can trust someone or not. But again, I just think that the need to do that and the desire to do that is so strong that any kind of like abstinence only guidelines will not take, as we have seen historically when for different reasons people found sex to be something that was too dangerous to engage in, people do it anyway.
Well, Marianne, one option, sex is often thought of as something involving more than one person, but since that's not an option now, the other option is masturbation. And I'm wondering how this pandemic might change the way we think about sex and think about masturbation.
It's a very exciting question. I don't know. I mean, it's one of those things where there's been different memes going around about, you know, the only safe sex, of course, is with yourself. And I expect that sex toy sales have increased dramatically. But yeah, it's going to be really interesting how that shifts like a society's view, right? And how we define sex as a result could also change. I don't know. It's going to be really exciting to find out.
Do you have any other ideas about how the long-term permanent changes in dating and falling in love? Any other possibilities that you'll be tracking, Marianne?
Well, one side issue that I'm very intrigued by is creativity. And I think that this pandemic has offered us a really interesting opportunity to see how creative potential mates are. And creativity is a big area in my part of psychology. And we look at creativity as being linked to things like intelligence, mate value, so how well we think of someone as a potential short-term versus long-term mate. And then we judge men and women differently by how creative they are, all sorts of things. And I'm really intrigued by how our standards for creativity might shift over the long term. Like if we're having to be really creative right now if we date, right? Like you have to think about things like, oh, let's share a recipe together and each of us make it and then we can eat it together all virtually, right? Or, you know, you could tour the Louvre or other museums online on your date and learn about art together. It's like, I just think it's really cool. So I want to track some creativity in first dates as we get out of the pandemic. But in terms of the other long-term effects, in one respect, I think we're going to have higher demands for sharing and disclosing personal information, because I think people who are dating right now are getting used to that. And, you know, and that was something that Jessica brought up before, like there's not a lot of distracting information. So we have a situation where outside influences are sort of in the background now, where before they would have been more central. I think that's going to be interesting. Like, are people going to be expecting more companionship? Are they going to be expecting more personal disclosures up front?
Yeah, disclosures like, let me see your antibodies test results, that kind of disclosure.
It could be. It could be. Or it could be just like, tell me some of your vulnerabilities, right? It's going to be really interesting to see how it pans out for sure.
Jessica, before I let you go, do you have any advice for how people can date right now? I love the idea of taking a virtual tour of the Louvre together.
Yeah, that's a great idea. I will be stealing that.
Welcome.
Honestly, my first piece of advice is sit near a natural light or get a lamp and put it behind your laptop, because normally you would go to a bar or restaurant with really good ambiance, and now your apartment is the bar. So do yourself favors and make sure that you're well lit.
Good Zoom lighting. Very good advice.
Yeah, good Zoom lighting. And, you know, the other thing I would say is that there's no avoiding the fact that all of our lives have been totally upended. And so you don't have to pretend that that's not on your mind. And in some ways, hopefully that can bring you closer to this new person to whom you're speaking, because they're going through it too. We are all going through it. So as Marianne put it so well, people can be more upfront about their vulnerabilities. You can be more honest about the people you miss, the ways that you're struggling, how this has affected your job and your friendships and your mental health. And it can be something, even though, of course, it's something that is keeping you physically apart from this person, it could also be something that helps you really connect with them on a deeper level.
I feel connected with you guys just talking about this stuff. Marianne Fisher is a psychology professor at St. Mary's University, and Jessica Goldstein is a freelance writer. Thanks, guys. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
You come to the New Yorker Radio Hour for conversations that go deeper with people you really want to hear from, whether it's Bruce Springsteen or Questlove or Olivia Rodrigo, Liz Cheney, or the godfather of artificial intelligence, Geoffrey Hinton, or some of my extraordinarily well-informed colleagues at The New Yorker. So join us every week on The New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.